Hello, this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. I'm Steve Poizner, healthcare consumer advocate, founder, and executive director. Our nonprofit's mission is to help you navigate the complex healthcare system and understand your legal rights, options, and opportunities when you encounter problems and obstacles. We want to empower you with the information you need to fight back and get the best possible care. Our special guests, experts in their field of healthcare and medicine, provide you with an informative, interesting, and life-changing education on a variety of healthcare topics important to you and your loved ones. In our new Fight Back mini-cast series, we take you through the highlights and great educational information from our most popular podcast topics in our very large library. Let's get started. Tell us, first of all, Howard, about what did the duties of the health commissioner include, you know, for the state of New York? And then tell us about how you first heard about this potential pandemic and how did you begin to react to it?
Sure. So the responsibility of the health commissioner is to oversee the public health for the entire state for the 20 million and oversees all of the health facilities and sort of regulates the healthcare industry within the state of New York, whether it's hospitals, nursing homes, long-term care facilities. It monitors the professional responsibility aspects of physicians. It looks at all the public health crises that are out there. We all think about the pandemic, but there are so many other issues that I had to deal with and that the public health community deals with. So that's the background. We also have an incredible state lab, the Wadsworth Lab. So we were working on many different issues prior to the pandemic, whether it was Ebola, Legionella, Zika, flu, measles crisis. And shortly before the pandemic, we were dealing with the e-cigarette issue, which people probably remember. There was a problem of contamination in the e-cigarettes. So I was dealing with that in the autumn of 2019. And then in the first week of 2020, I had read an article about another, quote, SARS virus in China. And that was on the 5th or 6th of January. And I brought that to the attention of the governor's team and said that this is something that we need to watch. And within that week, the numbers were in China had gone up a little bit. And by the 13th or 12th or 13th, they said there were 41 cases in China, although I suspected that was probably a low number compared to what it probably was. And we already started to get concerned about this and started to monitor the airports coming in, particularly JFK. And they were also looking at San Francisco Airport and Chicago's O'Hare. Because a lot of people, obviously, was in Wuhan, and the passengers were coming in, 85% of the passengers were coming into those three airports. So we jumped on this very quickly. I spoke to the CDC at that point early in January and decided that we need to monitor any potential cases. And so that was in January. And my worry was that if it's like SARS, the SARS from 2004, 2005, or MERS, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, those are both also coronaviruses, then at some point this was going to spread person to person. And then in January 20th or so, that's when we heard that that was what was happening, that it was spreading. And I was very concerned about that and shared that with the governor's team that this jumping from person to person now made it much more difficult to control, contain, and was the danger for a potential pandemic.
Did you know at that point that it was airborne?
We knew it was a respiratory illness like SARS, these coronaviruses and MERS. And I feel that in a lot of ways, initially, like back in the beginning of January, when everyone said another SARS virus, the normal reaction is, well, they controlled it in a couple cities and they got containment and it went away. But this was it may be in the same family and maybe a cousin, but every cousin doesn't act the same as the other cousin. So the potential way that this would ultimately unfold was clearly different than the first SARS outbreak.
The whole country was watching super closely what was happening in New York City and New York State. How close to, complete collapse? You used the word collapse. Potentially you were working hard to make sure that didn't happen. I mean, how close to completely over capacity did you get to?
So I was very worried about this. We have 53,000 beds in the state, and the modelers predicted 140,000 hospitalizations. And so that was just, when you think about that, even though we push the hospitals to double their capacity, so that would bring us to, let's say, 100,000, and no one's going to get absolutely double, but we were like 75,000, 100,000. Still, that would not reach what we needed. And the numbers in March of 2020, which is escalating, you know, the morning, one evening, it would be one number, the next morning, it would have doubled. And so by the second week, about April 12th, 13th, around that time, which was about a month into this, because our first case was on the 1st of March, we had another case on the 3rd or so, and then it just started to take off. But by that first, second week of April, we had 18,825 people in the hospital, and we had 4,494 people intubated at that point. And as I explained to the governor and to everyone, that this is about respiratory failure. If you don't have the ventilators, you don't have supplies, you don't have what you need to take care of these individuals in the hospital. It's not just, you know, just saying we have a bed. We need the respiratory support. So we were looking everywhere for not only ventilators, but all the respiratory supports we needed. And we looked across the state, not just in the hospitals, but in outpatient facilities and you know, places where they do colonoscopies, you know, there's a ventilator there. Anesthesia machines are basically ventilators with anesthesia gases attached to it. So we were grabbing all of them and pulling them into the system so that we would have them available. And it's ironic because my background is an anesthesiologist, a cardiologist, and a critical care doctor. So all of these things sort of came to play at the same time. And then we're looking at the number of things we had to deal with, and every day, the amount of phone calls, the emails, the texts, you know, multiple phones ringing at the same time to try to manage this crisis, because the numbers in New York, they were just increasing. And every day we were aggressive to get the communication, the messages out to the public, because people were appropriately worried and scared about what was happening. And when you saw those numbers increasing, and then, you know, we were up to at one point 800, just shy of 800 deaths a day. I mean, this is just unbelievable. And then one of the other challenges we had was one of the hospitals in the system, because the amount of oxygen was flowing through the system. And when something is flowing that fast, it can condense on the outside of the pipes. The oxygen cylinders actually are outside the hospital building itself, those big, enormous cylinders. So some of the pipes started to freeze, and we had to call the fire department of New York to come in and actually hose the lines down, because we were worried that those pipes would freeze, and then the patients in the hospital wouldn't even get the oxygen they needed.
So if you were advising, you know, future governors or presidents, I mean, what are some lessons learned for the country here? How do we begin to take steps now to prepare for the next pandemic?
So I think a couple of things. One is more collaboration. I think what happened is that this needs to be a national response. It requires leadership. That's what we were doing in New York, leading on saying, communicate the message, get the information out there. Stay coordinated. That's one part of this. And then the other thing is you need to have a little bit more of a buffer in the health system. And it over the course of the last 20 years, 30 years, and I've seen a lot of medicine and healthcare, everything has been very streamlined. So we don't have the extra bed, the extra hospital ward, the extra supplies. It's a very sort of real time, you know, sort of like the supplies in a supermarket. In 2 days, they'll be empty, right? 3 days, they'll be empty of the supplies. And I think, or whatever, I don't know the exact number of supermarkets, but the amount of supplies and resources are really limited in the sense that they're always coming in. We need to have more of extra resources, extra staff. We had 70,000, 80,000 volunteers, but we need to have a system put into place. And Steve, if you remember, I developed the Medical Reserve Corps for the country right after 9/11. That was
right.
And I gave it to Tommy Thompson. He gave it to, you know, President Bush. And then it became like this major thing. And there's 800,000 volunteers in the country. And the purpose of that Medical Reserve Corps that I put together was to have volunteers, which actually were used across the country to give vaccines. So I felt really pleased about that. But you need to have these volunteers. You need to have people available to help out so that if a pandemic occurs or something else occurs on the health front, you have people available and the resources available, both human resources, but also supplies available. And also, I think to make things in America more. I think it's a big issue. We were looking for across the country, we're looking across the world for supplies. And in a lot of ways, you need to have things revved up in the country where you can make whatever supplies you need, whether it's protective equipment, masks, or any of the other supplies we need. But that was a big worry, you know, in March and April, saying, what if we run out of supplies here?
I want to thank you for listening to today's Fight Back minicast. You can listen to the full podcast on this topic or check out additional podcasts by going to our website at www.healthcareconsumerrights.org. We also welcome your input and stories that we can use on future podcasts. This is Steve Poizner, and this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. Thanks for listening. I look forward to our next podcast. Talk with you soon.